MediaFree.tv Podcast Network.
You having a good time?
Yeah, yes, I'm having a great time.
There's plenty more. I'm gonna have a great time all night.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 21, Bleeding Hearts. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Dave. Did you get any sleep?
Nope.
Shall we begin, Sarah?
We shall.
All right.
Hello, Rock Bottom. We've been waiting for you.
All right, let's start with our D plot. Joe's heart some more. Joe goes to see his coach to thank him for standing by him through all his shit this year. Which I guess is partly his heart and partly that whole thing where he was maybe going to have to go to prison for a while. The coach takes forever to say he's looking for a new starter to replace Joe because of his heart and maneuvers Joe into agreeing that it's okay since it's for the good of the team and Joe is sad. And when Donna comes to find him in his dorm much later, he's agitatedly packing, bitterly tells her about getting kicked off the team. She thinks it's crazy move by the coach.
May I interrupt you for a moment?
Please, yes.
To discuss said agitated packing.
Okay, yep.
He's basically unfolding his pants, inspecting them, I presume, to assure himself that each of them still has two legs, and then, like, refolding them lengthwise the other way, doing, like, a half roll fold and slamming them into a duffel bag. Like, just put them in the bag. They're all pants.
They were already folded, probably.
Yeah, you're just creating more air in whatever. It's so annoying, and it's bad blocking, and... I remembered Cameron Bancroft as being much less bad in this role, but he's so boring. Yeah. Ugh, God, just go away.
He's cute. That's kind of all he has going for him, really.
Yeah, he is very cute, but oh man, snooze.
And like, and just for the record, like being cute is not nothing. That's more than a lot of people on this show have going for them, including guys in the opening credits. Just saying. Brian Austin Green. Donna thinks it's a crazy move by the coach since they don't even know what's wrong with Joe yet, but Joe is stuck on depression now. Moving on to our C plot, Steve and Claire Valentine's stuff. So it's Valentine's Day and Alpha Omega is throwing a virgin party at the Peach Pit after dark. No, for real. Clip two.
Hey, what's this sex out thing?
Well, it's kind of like the Great American Smokeout, except instead of not smoking, we are asking people to take a vow of celibacy for 24 hours. Now, it's strictly voluntary, of course, but we are trying to bring awareness to safe sex and abstinence.
Exactly what do you mean by abstinence? Is kissing allowed?
Sure, kissing, dancing, anything you can do from the neck up is okay.
Well, you can count me out.
Guys, this is a pajama party. Baby doll teddies, satin nighties, see-through nightgowns. How can it be? Think of it as 24 hours of foreplay, right?
I mean, interesting that I just shaded Cameron Bancroft's acting when the worst actor in the world kicked off that last clip. Hey, what's this sex out thing? Ask your acting coach, please.
He sounds like a total plant anyway. It's like, please let me be devil's advocate so you can make the case for an adult slumber party at a bar. Yeah. Anyway, as Claire watches from the side of the good old student union, Steve asks for a pledge card and signs up. Somehow he's a campus tastemaker because others follow suit off his example. And Claire asks how Steve can make a promise he has no intention of keeping, but Steve, for some reason, defends his willpower, and Claire proposes a bet. She thinks she'll win because she is not signing the pledge. And Claire rigs the bet by cutting off the pussy tap before the 24-hour clock starts. Susan and Brandon also want to bet on Claire, but whoops, Susan took the pledge to include make your own obligatory cold shower joke here. There's also a sex out tea. God. Brandon gives Susan some flowers for Valentine's and she gets all horny. She also got him a gift. And to the list of everything he sucks at, you can add receiving gifts. Clip three.
Wow. Woodward and Bernstein signed letters. Well done, Keats. Not bad.
Not bad? You know how hard these were to get?
Yes, I do.
I'm sorry. Would you enjoy it more if she'd made it into a jigsaw puzzle, you dingleberry?
Oh my God, the fucking puzzle. Never forget.
I haven't. I'm sorry. I keep bringing it up.
I also almost believe that Brandon knows who those are. And then, there's more. I mean, no, those being Woodward and Bernstein. Then, there's more flowers, a dozen red roses. And from the way Susan acts all ashamed and squirrely, we know they're from Jonathan before she even looks at the card. Oh, God. LOL, the sex out party has a countdown clock until people are ready, are able to fuck again. Like, are they even? I don't understand how any of this works. Donna's nightie, by the way, is bizarre. You can see the visual aids. It's like pink Minnie Mouse nonsense. Claire gives Steve the hard sell, and I do mean hard. There's even sexy dancing, and Steve tries to stay on track by putting on a sleep mask. And finally, Steve is white-knuckling it to the clock on the wall in the green room at the Peach Pit After Dark. But Claire set the clock ahead 30 seconds, but he set it back a minute. He wins stuff. The end. Moving on. So stupid. To our B-plot. Ginger and Val. Some more. Oh. Val sees Susan at the Peach Pit, and they discuss the time Susan is still spending with Jonathan, even though the two of them are over as a couple now. And Susan makes a reference to her gratitude that Brandon forgave her, like, for what? He was the one who canceled their plans last week. Whatever. Val suggests getting Jonathan out of Susan's hair by fixing him up with someone else, which is how we end up with Val and Ginger meeting Jonathan on a restaurant patio. And when she sees him, Ginger decides he is as good looking as David. And Val continues listing his qualities in clip four.
He travels all over the world, makes a lot of money. It's definitely a good catch. Sit here and I'll be right back. Oh, Jonathan, I'm glad you can make it. That's Ginger right over there.
Wow, she is cute.
Well, she's more than cute. She's available.
What do you mean available?
Well, let's see, how do I put it? She's easy. She's very easy.
Okay.
I was so hung up on the part where maybe 23-year-old cub reporter Jonathan Caston makes a lot of money.
I mean,
and
if
couldn't really get all that worked up about the pimping of Ginger, like this whole, oh Jesus, whatever. See my previous comments.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's unlikely that he would keep getting these assignments that he's talking about. But the fact that he is, like, in those days, he probably was making, like, decent money if he was, like, doing all freelance stuff as much as he seems to be. He probably makes more than Ginger as a grifter anyway, but whatever.
Well, I guess. I just wish that the show would, like, these people are in college or recent graduates. Yeah. Like, there is a way to make this realistic and still have there be drama, and
yes,
this is not it.
Right. The real issue is that he would not be getting these assignments at his level of experience, like,
yeah,
editor
exactly.
of a college newspaper or not. Like, you don't get to start in the middle. He would be, you know, he would be going to city council meetings and writing them up for, like, the Seattle newspaper, maybe.
Yeah.
Whatever.
More like Tacoma or
right, exactly.
South, yeah, or Charleston.
Spokane.
No.
Introductions are made, and Ginger and Jonathan bond over the fact that Brandon and his stupid friends hate them both, which is kind of funny. The next day, David brings Val cafeteria breakfast in his dorm room bed because now it's Valentine's Day. And there's also a card containing a poem he wrote, and
no,
that she asks him to read. And here it is, clip five.
His fingertips feel the sensation to weep. The wax melted candles reflect in your sleep. A beauty that forces the pain to retreat, even though the waves can keep breaking. The power of destiny pulls like a rage. The touch of your lips hides the beast in the cage. For love, as does wine, gets better with age. My heart is the one that you're taking. I hope and pray as the years run away, and hourglass sands stand still as I say, I love you a little bit more every day. You're the half of my whole, no mistake.
The barn door creaking.
Creaking.
I don't even know why I'm focusing on this when everything about that was bad, but like it starts out he and she, and by the end it's you and I. Like, figure your shit out. Thought you were a songwriter.
Did I ever tell you the story about the time I added a line to some guy's emo poem in high school?
You told me, but you should still tell. You should tell the world.
Some guy was doing some, like, you know, and I'm very confident saying super false cry for help poem, you know, attention seeking poem about committing suicide. Like, very fake. And I forget exactly how it goes, but the last line is, and so then I would pick up the gun, and then just before he submitted it, I added, but I would trade it all in for a delicious onion bun.
The end of that story isn't that he killed himself, is it?
No, he was like a grade A jackass, so so it was fine. Nobody shed a tear for the onion bun line.
Oh, no.
By the way, can I just say onion buns? Delicious. Hard to find here.
Yeah, onion buns are good.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. You can even onion bagels are hard to find here. Yeah. We live in a food desert. Moving on. This poem is terrible. She also has a gift for him, and because it's the past, it's a leather friendship bracelet. How much this overstates the meaning of friendship bracelets? I mean, the show as a whole is vast. Like, we also had Brandon getting a friendship bracelet or giving one to that dumb homeless kid at the Peach Pit many seasons ago. Like, it's a bracelet. Who cares? But she says it's because she's had many men in her life, but David is the only one who's been her friend. Uh-oh. And then Ginger and Jonathan show up for the sex out party, and Val is irate. She does not want their deal to be exposed, but Ginger promises her that things will be fine. But after a commercial, things are already going bad as the gangsters who are sexing out sit across the dance floor from Ginger and Jonathan and discuss them rudely in clipsics.
Well, there's a match made in heaven, huh?
Valerie said she was nice.
She's a human virus.
Oh, they're keeping you in the dark, I guess.
Yeah, we should definitely keep our distance.
Look, I just thought if Jonathan and Ginger hit it off, it would keep him out of Susan's hair.
Well, they certainly do deserve each other.
He'll be lucky if he still has his gold fillings at the end of the night.
Oh, don't look now, but we're being watched.
Great.
A kiss.
Oh, what was that for? I thought we had a deal.
Yeah, just giving him something to think about.
Whatever the deal is, like, we don't hear what it is. I think it was just that he accompany her to this and be in Val's eyeline, because, like, that's it. We never hear it. But anyway, it's set into motion. Oh, wait. Sorry, I'm wrong. I forgot. It's set into motion during a dance contest. Ginger pretends to have twisted her ankle, and the DJ says that Jonathan has to find another partner if he wants to stay in it. And since he well knows that Brandon doesn't dance, Susan is the obvious replacement. And Susan gets pissed at Brandon for trying to put Jonathan and she together, and more pissed at Jonathan when he won't take no for an answer, whereupon she slaps him and Brandon gets more horny for her than ever.
Ew.
Sorry. That's the face he makes. It's the only one way to interpret it.
No, I know. I'm just saying the whole thing is really retrograde, and I don't know. Like, yeah. All of you fuck off.
Indeed. Ginger later is pissed that Val set her up with someone who's still in love with someone else and goes off to hit on David some more. But Val heads her off at the pass to take David into her office and confess everything that she and Ginger did in the fall. She apparently does have $50,000, but it's all the money she has. Also, how? Like, the spotty bookkeeping on this is as spotty as with whatever Dylan's fortune was. But anyway, David tells her to pay Ginger if she really doesn't want the story to get out, which is when Val tells him about the alternative payment plan that is his dick in clip 7.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. Ginger's going to give up 50 G's just to sleep with me?
Yeah. Flattered.
I'm amazed.
David, you know I love you, right? But what else can I do? I could lose everything.
Oof. she makes a very, well, you should describe the face that she makes as she's trying to implore him to do
I believe I called it bring it down a notch, Thomasina Keen in the visual aids, but she's just like, I mean, it's full cube poo, and she's also about to start crying, probably because the poo is a cube.
Yes.
It's indeed. Very sharp, pointy, painful. Who cares? Who cares?
Yep, I agree.
Who
cares? So at home, after the party, Val takes off her earrings and reads David's poem again. Bad move. And the next day, Val meets Ginger for breakfast and takes the promised tape in clip 8.
Any copies? Please, Val. Honor among thieves, you know. Besides, I got what I wanted.
Well, I hope you're happy.
Mm. More than you can imagine.
Well.
We got it. Thanks.
Except Ginger slinks off gloating to get her plane, whereupon David comes up behind Val. She says she's sorry, and he's like, sorry that she pimped him out, because she doesn't say that, but clearly that's what she thinks happened. She says that last night was the worst night of her life. The thought of him touching Ginger drove her crazy, but twist! Clip 9.
I never laid a finger on her. Told her I was in love with you and I wouldn't do it.
But I don't understand. I mean, she gave me the tape back.
Ginger didn't want to sleep with me, Val. She wanted to hurt you.
I'm really sorry I had to drag you into this.
Me too.
At least nothing happened.
Where you're wrong. A lot happened. And as far as I'm concerned, it's over between you and me.
What?
It's over. And you know what the irony of this is? I want to be with you more than anyone else in the world, and I can't. Not after what you asked me to do.
But David, I had no choice.
There's always a choice, Val.
You're probably gonna tell everybody, right?
No. I wouldn't do that to you.
So, okay. So he went to her hotel room and then was like, just said he wasn't gonna sleep with her. Like, he couldn't just call up and say this isn't gonna happen, because she would have the same result either way, like getting to torture Val and make her think something happened. Like, I don't.
Yeah, and then David dumps her. So,
right.
I mean, did they just sit around like reading comic books all night? I don't understand. And then also, since you're in such a bad mood about, you know, loving Val but having to dump her because she tried to pimp you for stupid reasons involving your twat stepsister, who cares? Why don't you just tell everyone? Because the only thing you've got left is the hot goss.
Right.
So go for it.
Honestly. The best of all for him, though, is he gets to ditch the stupid bracelet that she gave him. Moving on to our A plot. But first, we have a message from Melinda.
Melinda wanted to contribute $50 for what she calls the, quote, ongoing joy, provided by our podcast network here at Previously.tv, particularly, again with this, and Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs.
Hey.
Mastess is not, in fact, a PTV joint, but it does seem like Melinda should get her money's worth.
So we're going to list 5 songs we wished we'd heard on the Beverly Hills 90210 soundtrack. Number 1, Me and Steven Sanders by the Manic Street Preachers.
Number 2, Dave Has a Problem, Seriously, by De La Soul.
Mm-hmm. The Kelly Song by Cheer Zone Woody Boyd.
Number 4, The Sailors Say Brandon, You're a Dickwad, a Dickwad, and you're only 5'3". My life, my love, and my dream is you eating some bees. By Looking Glass.
And, of course, number 5, Donna by Richie Valens.
Thanks for listening, Melinda. You are so precious to us.
On to our final storyline, Kelly and Coke some more. Colin takes cash out at an ATM in advance of acquiring more blow, a mission so critical he can't even drop Kelly off at the Peach Pit to meet Jackie, which explains why she's pulled herself together enough to have put on makeup today. They briefly bicker, but Colin thinks he has a winning line in clip 10.
we stand up Danny Five, we're out of luck for the whole weekend.
Danny Five!
Danny Five. Also, you know when drug dealers don't take off?
The weekend.
You idiot. Get a better dealer.
He's got office hours.
I know. What the fuck? Actually, we close early on summer Fridays. Last eight ball, 2:30.
Like, what is he dealing out of the Social Security Administration? Whatever.
Seriously.
Kelly says she promised that she would be there to meet Jackie, and Colin tells her not to come crying to him when she's coming down. Cut to the Peach Pit, where Kelly's loved ones, which are down to Brandon and David, are gathered in a corner booth to intervent her. Remember how David told Donna in the last episode that there was no point telling Jackie? Apparently he's changed his mind because she's also there, and she is pissed that he didn't say something sooner. Supposedly, Kelly claims she only does coke on the weekends, LOL. Anyway, Jackie says she thinks they'll get through to her. And of course, that's Nat's cue to come and tell them that Kelly called to say she won't be able to meet them after all, but that she'll call Jackie later. And I was about to say, I refuse to believe that Jackie doesn't have a cell phone, but I guess I do believe that Kelly would get out of actually speaking to her by calling the Peach Pit business phone instead.
Totally.
Colin parks outside Danny Five's, leaving Kelly in the car. Out Danny Five comes, and he's swathed in vests and scarves like a low-budget current-day Johnny Depp impersonator. Also, he's Brenda and Brandon's wheelchair cousin Bobby. Whatever they need, he says, he's there, and they shall hang out sometime. Sure. And Colin and Kelly have new drug friends, and they are drinking beer together at Colin's studio. The doorbell rings. It's Donna with a bunch of Kelly's mail. And after Colin gets the new drug friends out to the deck, Donna lets her in, and they have this conversation in clip 11.
There's a letter in here from your dad. If you want, I can stay with you while you open it.
No, I'm fine.
Did you talk to your mom? Because she called this morning. She said you were supposed to meet her at the Peach Pit.
Oh, yeah, I know. I spent the whole morning apologizing to her.
Come home, Kel. Please. I mean, you don't belong here. Why don't you come with me at the Alpha Party tomorrow? You know, have some fun, be with your friends.
I am with my friends, and I'm having a great time.
You sure this is what you really want?
Yeah.
Well, if there's ever anything you need, I know I'm always here for you.
Take a hint. And then she finally, like, sob stories out, like, do-do-do-do-do-do. And Kelly shuts the door and stands there brooding next to it for 2 weeks.
Forever, honestly.
God.
And oh no, drug music, clip 12. This is the soundtrack of Colin and Kelly trying to find there's any remnants of their stash in their apartment.
This is also the same soundtrack that you would hear when Michael's on a stakeout. In Knight Rider.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say it's also, I believe, from some part of the Terminator as well.
It's very reminiscent also of the Unsolved Mysteries theme song. It's just bad.
Yeah.
Topical.
Indeed. Colin and Kelly are searching the apartment for coke, as I said, but neither of them can find any, and he accuses her of going through a whole gram by herself, which is when things escalate in clip 13.
You know, you're really a selfish bitch, you know that?
It was my money that bought it. That makes it my stash.
Daddy's money. You're not gonna wrap me around your little finger like you do your father.
You don't know anything about me or my dad. So why don't you just shut up?
You're right, I don't. And I don't care. If you want more, you score this time.
Fine.
Done.
Fine!
Oh, the music was starting again.
Yep.
I mean, she really is a selfish bitch. It is time someone said it.
But... it's true. I will also note about the music that it's not dissimilar to Press Your Luck.
Right. Yes, it is.
No whammies, no whammies, no whammies. Fine.
So Kelly actually does go to Danny Five's house on her own. And while she waits for Danny Five to return from the back with a couple of grams, she meets Sherry, a sex worker who is paid in coke, which is the polite way to put it. But I think you know what I mean. She's also the ghost of Kelly Future. Kelly wants to pay and get out, but Danny Five tells her it's pure pharmaceutical coke from his private reserve, not even for sale. And he wants to do some with her right now. Kelly has qualms about using his straw, but on the other hand, it is Coke, so she wipes off the ends, and that probably solves all the possible hygiene and or disease issues. And when we check back in with her, it seems like she's done kind of a lot, and she and Danny Five start making out. Sherry comes out asking for some of Danny Five's supply, and he puts her off on Kirk, this other guy who she says is mad at her. But Danny Five stands firm. No free rides for Sherry. But she didn't say it would be free, and she knows how he likes it. Danny Five can't pass that up. And if this were airing now, it would totally turn into a debauched three-way with Kelly. But instead, while they fuck, Kelly is left alone, which is when she puts on her coat and tries to flee. But then this other Kurt guy darts out of nowhere and blocks the door because he knows she's got a big bill to pay. She yells for Danny, and Kurt covers her mouth, pulls her over to the couch. This is where it gets bad. Terrified, she agrees to stop yelling, and he starts trying to get something going with her sexually, but she puts him off by suggesting that they have more wine. He idiotically hands her the bottle, which she, of course, then smashes over his head before escaping. And apparently she only gets as far as her car because she calls Nat to get Brandon, LOL, at the Peach Pit. Where else would he be? And Brandon and Susan go to rescue her from wherever she is. And when they find her, she's still sitting in her car, shaking, crying, gripping the wheel, catatonic. And it takes a while for her to even register that Brandon is there and open the window. And we hear this clip 14.
Brandon, please help me.
It's okay. It's okay. Hey, it's okay. It's okay. It's all right. It's okay. It's okay.
Because he'd know what to do.
Honestly.
Whatever.
He's a man, and she knows that he's wrapped around her finger, so I guess that's why he gets a call instead of, like, her brother? Anyway, at Cedars-Sinai, the only hospital in town, Jackie pours water at Kelly's bedside, and she and Brandon assure Kelly that she's in good hands, but she's very ashamed. And when Jackie has given them some privacy, they boringly rehash their breakup, basically, in our final clip.
I'm here for you.
I wish you were.
I am. I always have been.
What did I do?
You're gonna be all right.
I feel like such a loser.
You're not a loser.
Don't say that.
Yeah, you are.
I am.
Yep.
Look what I've done to myself.
You're just human, Kel. That's all.
I had everything. I lost it all.
All that matters now is that you take care of yourself.
I still love you, Brandon.
Yeah, look, you better get some sleep.
I'm so scared.
I mean, I love how she's never so bad off that she can't baby voice manipulate him into getting him to stay when he has a girlfriend and it is not you by your choice, which I support, but both of you eat all the bees.
Yep. And that's the end. Let's wrap it up with our most valuable player. The coach of the CU football team for having his eye on next season.
Joe's pants for briefly continuing to have two legs and five pockets each. Good job, guys. The fuck?
Least valuable player. Kelly. I'm going to finally give it to her because she is really goes off the deep end in this episode.
Yeah, she sucks. However, I'm giving it to Danny Five, who, in addition to running his drug business in what I feel is a very disorganized and inefficient manner, is also weirdly flashing his belly button at clients.
Yeah.
I have an optional challenge for you if you wish to take it.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to be five. It could just be one each.
Okay.
Two ways.
Yep.
Nat would be a terrible drug dealer.
Well, allow Sarah give the obvious first choice.
Well, it's almost too obvious, so I'm going to go with a more like distant option, okay, which is that he lets them build a mall on his corner.
He's always trying to upsell everyone into a mega 8-ball.
Oh, okay. Well, we can do five since we're not doing... Okay, I'll do one.
Yeah.
Offers a deluxe version of a gram of Coke, which is a gram of Coke with lettuce, onion, and tomato.
Uh-huh. Puts Brandon's first vial under glass on the wall of his drug den.
All right, we got one more. You got to do it.
Oh,
I mean... There's still the obvious one on the table here.
Come on, Tara.
Okay, fine. He would always be giving it away for free.
There you go.
And that makes five.
All right. Are you doing a user one or was that it?
Oh, I can do a user one. Right. Sure.
Wait, I think I'm going to try to do it here.
Okay.
There we go.
Oh. This one comes from Angie K941 on Twitter. Five ways Valerie would be much cooler / more fun to hang out with than Kelly and Donna and most of the time Claire. This is kind of an unfortunate episode to do this one for, but let's give it a shot anyway. Sarah.
She looks way better in the pajamas than Donna. Certainly.
She's always scheming, so she'd be fun to hang out with because of the drama.
She does run the club, so if you want to go there, you know a guy.
True. She's got 50 grand, apparently, so you could probably get her to pick up a lot of tabs when you go out for drinks.
She has friends who are liberal, let's say, with their attentions, which could be fun.
All right, well, that makes five.
Next time on Again With This, Kelly meets Tara Streetchild, Valerie makes her move on Colin, and there's a two-pronged ski stuff subplot that'll make you want to Kennedy cousin yourself into a tree when you see the visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv and this very podcast at AWT90210. I'm Woodward and Bernstein signed letter Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. I'm here with my co-host, Indecent Proposal, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Sex Out, David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.